Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host today, Cheryl Snyder, on this Thursday, June 14th, 2018. We have a great show today. On the first half of the program, we'll speak with Pat from the Juno's annual garden tour, and we'll learn about the challenges low-wage workers face finding affordable housing in Alaska with Brian Wilson of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. In the second half of the program, it is all about the arts with a primer on tomorrow's organ concert at the State Office Building and a preview of this weekend's cultural events that are not to be missed. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Attorneys for the Gila River Indian community defended the Indian Child Welfare Act at a federal appeals court hearing Wednesday. The Goldwater Institute, in a case, is challenging the law, which seeks to keep Native children with Native families. Goldwater claims the law does not protect children from neglect and abuse, but tribes and Native organizations say the law for more than four decades has kept children from being removed from their homes and cultures and from harmful practices by state agencies and child welfare proceedings. In a statement, Gila River Governor Stephen Lewis says, no matter what it takes, they'll continue to fight to protect Indian children and families. Gila River was joined in court by the Navajo Nation. A Cincinnati area high school is keeping its Indian mascot for now. This week, a committee heard debate over the R-word at Anderson High School. Those working to change the name say it's a racial slur, while supporters say it's a school tradition. Supporters showed up to the meeting wearing bright orange T-shirts with the Indian mascot and the words, "Save our skins." Local television news stations report, since the committee could not agree on a yes or no vote, the mascot and team name will remain. The committee was formed to consider changes. The school board has final decision. A nurse who wrongly administered medicine at a Cherokee Nation hospital is no longer employed with the Oklahoma tribe, the Cherokee Phoenix reports. More than 100 patients may have been exposed to HIV and hepatitis C between January and April after the RN used the same syringe on patients. The hospital is currently contacting and testing those involved. Tribal counselors were updated this week by the hospital. The RN's name has not been released. A gathering of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people recently came to a close in Juneau, Alaska. As KTOO's Adeline Baxter reports, the more than 30-year celebration began as an attempt to save culture and has become a reminder that Alaska Native traditions are alive and thriving.
Dancing along the parade route in downtown Juneau, Owen James of Huna pauses to hug friends in the crowd.
It feels great because seeing all these younger generations picking up where we left off, and to see and hear them singing the songs and drumming and stepping up and taking the lead too, it's awesome.
And that's significant, because there was a time when some feared their cultures wouldn't survive. Marlene Johnson said she was reluctant when she first heard the idea to host a cultural gathering for Southeast Alaska Natives, but she knew their cultures needed saving.
It took a long time to get us to the point that we were able to convince the outside world that our culture is not bad. It was a thing of celebration.
Johnson is the chair of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Board of Trustees. When celebration first began, decades of cultural oppression and government schools had all but wiped out Native languages in the region. Johnson said you never saw children wearing regalia or singing traditional songs in public just a few decades ago.
When I saw those kids yesterday, to see them dancing the way they did, I thought to myself, everything we've done the last 30 years has been worth it when I see that.
Today, celebration brings thousands of people to Juneau. It's become one of the largest gatherings in Alaska. Nearly every community in Southeast is represented on the main stage in Centennial Hall, where about 50 dance groups perform new and traditional songs. As efforts to revitalize Alaska Native languages continue, elders like James and Johnson can take comfort in seeing the younger generation take on a bigger role in celebration each time. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, gateway to tribal colleges created by and for American Indians, accredited and local, with certificate programs to master degree programs. Info at aihec.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country, and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You are listening to KTOO Juno. The time is 3:06. This is Cheryl Snyder, your host for Juno Afternoon. Joining me in the studio now is Pat Hartman of Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners. And Pat is here to talk to us about the upcoming annual garden tour. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Cheryl. So nice to be here again.
Oh, it's terrific having you here. I thought maybe we could start our conversation today with you sharing about what exactly is a garden tour? How does this work?
Well, the garden tour is basically you purchase a ticket. We can talk a little bit later on about how to purchase the tickets. But you purchase the ticket, you have a wristband that you will get at one of the gardens when you show your receipt. And then you go around and tour different gardens in the area. And this year we have 7 gardens. And there, most of them are out in the valley this year. And there's a little something for everyone. We have quite a few that have beautiful vegetable gardens, which is unusual on most of the garden tours. And we also have some that are very immaculate, professionally designed. And we have one that is, it's professionally designed, but she's a collector. So she, you know, she sees a plant, she buys it, she puts it in her yard and figures out a place to put it. And we have some that are woodland gardens that have a lot of very interesting plants in them. Some are rustic, where you can see a good idea if you want, don't want to do a whole lot of yard work, but you're typically a vegetable person. You know, it's trees and moss for her landscaping, and then they concentrate on vegetables. So whimsy, a little of everything. We're going to have some garden artists there, Kim Peterson and Tony Heckle. If you know their work, they've been at the plant sale before, have all the baubles and trinkets and different dishes. They will be at one of the gardens. And another thing we're going to be doing is plants. We're going to be selling some plants just because of the way things were this year, which is a whole nother topic.
Okay, and we'll get to that. We will get to that a little bit. So your eyes kind of lit up when you said that you have 7 gardens in the tour. Is that a lot for your tour?
We always have 6. That's what we try to get. And so some of it depends on whether you can get gardens that are side by side or where they are. So we've been scrounging and looking hard for gardens this year just because of the weather conditions. Things are not peaking like they were last year, to say the least. So we just really worked to get those 7 gardens, and I'm very happy that we did.
So, and how did you find them? How do you choose who will be a part of the tour?
Great question. We ask a lot of people. We drive around and look. We're not scouting out your home for anything horrible. We're just looking for gardens. Another way is that on our website, we have an area there. If you walk past a garden, you know of a garden, that you can go online and email us. You can fill in the details about the address, and if you know the owners, you can put that in. We usually do areas. It used to be they did 2 days. Now we're doing areas. That makes it a lot easier for doceting. So this year is in the valley. Next year we're hoping to be over in Douglas. So if you've got gardens that you'd like to nominate in downtown or over in the Douglas or even the Thane area, we would love to hear from you and get those lined up for next year's tour.
Yeah, great. It does sound like you put together a terrific variety of types of yards to see. I know I've had a chance. We were talking earlier. My husband is one of your colleagues through the Cooperative Extension Service, and so I've had a chance to go on some of these tours in the past, and they're always really, really fun. And I don't think I've seen a vegetable garden, so great to see some vegetables in there this year.
And there are gorgeous. There's gorgeous vegetable gardens. There's one that's predominantly a vegetable garden. There's another. There's probably about three or four other ones that are mixes, a good contrast of what you can do with having vegetables in your gardens, but also having separate away from the perennial plants. Yeah. So it's very interesting tour this year. I think people will enjoy it.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued to see the yard that is sort of a low maintenance. You described with lots of moss. I can do that.
Yes,
I can do that. So you mentioned difficult growing this year. It's been colder. Why don't you describe what's going on out there?
Well, everybody seems to think that we're about 3 to 4 weeks behind normal. So one of the gardens, her husband accuses her pictures that she sent me of it being a bait and switch because it looks nothing like the pictures. Normally this time of year, we'd have a lot of flowers out in bloom, and we're really about 3 weeks behind. My Japanese primulas are just starting to bloom, and usually it's like right after the plant cell that they are in bloom. And, you know, usually we've got a lot of the globe flowers blooming along the plant cell, and the Leo the lion daisy type flowers, and they're still blooming right now, and the others haven't really started, so we're not seeing dahlias or peonies. Dahlias would be way too soon, but you know, the peonies are starting to bud out, but they're not there. There's very few roses. So depending on what area you are in the Juneau area, some things are blooming, some are not. And I know we struggled at the plant cell for that same thing. A lot of plants, very little of them were showing. So one of the things that the Master Gardener is going to do, we are going to have a plant cell also for those people that are looking for plants this year, because it's been kind of slim pickings at a lot of places for plants. So we're going to be selling a few of those plants. We are taking donations, and you will be able to purchase plants at the plant sale.
Okay, and where is the plant sale going to be?
It's in the valley, and what we do is if you go to the website, you can purchase the tickets either at Hearthside, the Jack's website, or if you go to seak-mastergardeners.org. Our website is there, and you can purchase tickets online. We do, we've got Square now, so you can purchase online with a credit card. And then on the 21st, we'll go live with the address of where the gardens are, and you will take your receipt and pick, and you'll have your list there. You print out your list of where the gardens are going to be, and when you go to your first garden, whichever garden it is, you can visit the gardens in any order, you'll pick up a wristband that you will wear throughout the tour. And that's how we know that you've purchased a ticket.
Terrific. And is this a fundraiser for the Master Gardeners?
It is a fundraiser. It's one of our big fundraisers, that and the plant sale for the year. And that's what we pretty much work off of for the year on the different programs that we do. But also what we do is people who take the Master Gardener class, because it's now so expensive, we give them a $50 scholarship rebate if they get their 40 hours in by the end of the year that they started the class.
Okay, terrific. And what else are the Master Gardeners working on this summer? What else do you guys have going on?
I know there's a group of the students that are at the community gardens. We're working with Joel Boss. We've got two beds there, and they're running test plots. In August, this is our big gear up is the garden tour, and then July is kind of a break, but we're always looking for gardens, so don't forget about nominating a garden. In August, we're going to be doing a workshop with Ed Byarski on harvesting garlic. And then in the September meeting, it's going to be a joint meeting at the Valley Library with the Juneau Garden Club. And I'm going to be presenting a class on bonsai.
Ooh,
so if
terrific.
You're wondering how to keep your trees little, come learn some of those techniques.
Okay. And if people would like to get more involved with the Master Gardeners in general, maybe go through the course or just volunteer for some projects, how do they do that?
I would say they can always check our website to see what's going on. If they want to take the course, I know Darren's teaching it every other year, but I think you can do it online too. I would say if you do it online, please contact us, because we want to keep you in the loop on what's going on here. So possible to take that class, but the Extension Service would be the one to contact on when the classes are coming up.
Okay. Pat, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us about the garden tour coming up the weekend after this one on June 21st. Again, more information.
23rd.
I'm sorry. June 23rd. More information is on the website at Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners. You can Google search that and find it pretty quickly. So thanks. Did we miss anything?
No, I think that's it. Thank you very much for having us here.
Okay. Thanks so much, Pat Hartman.
Thanks.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see an octopus's garden with me. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. Warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our head on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing and dance around because we know we can't be found. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. The coral that lies beneath the waves, oh what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me, no one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
Come join the Juno Arts and Humanities Council for the first 2018 Summer Block Party this Friday, June 15th from 5:30 to 7 in the Jack Main Hall, featuring musical guests, the Juno Big Band, and a host of exciting Juno local merchants. There will be a beer garden and a whole lot more fun. Kick off the summer and support the new Jack, sponsored by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
It's coming up on 20 minutes past the hour right here on a Juno afternoon. This is Cheryl Snyder, your host for today. And joining me in the studio now is Brian Wilson of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. He's here to talk with us about the challenges low-income workers face in finding affordable housing. Brian, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Brian, you are here on the heels of a big report coming out yesterday morning that has some pretty sobering statistics for people of low income who are looking to find a place to live. I thought we could get into that report, but maybe first start with having you explain a little bit about your organization for those who aren't that familiar.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the opportunity. So again, I'm Brian Wilson. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. We're a statewide 501c3 organization that works to develop strategies to increase the availability of affordable housing in Alaska and also eliminate homelessness in our great state. So we do a lot of different things. We have a board of 15 brilliant individuals across the state who have decades of experience working on housing issues. We hold an annual conference every fall. We manage a statewide database on homelessness, and we also do a lot of advocacy at the local, state, and federal levels on these issues. So we kind of take everything full spectrum, and this piece that came out this week informs a lot of the work that we do.
Okay, and can you explain the organization that was behind sort of the base of the report? They do what you do, but on a national level? And
yeah.
then you contributed the Alaska data to it. Is that how that worked?
Yeah, actually, the data from this report is pulled from the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development and census figures. So the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, they're a nationwide advocacy and education organization that focuses on the affordability of housing for low-income individuals in our country. And so every year, they release a report that's called the Out of Reach Report. And it's an exciting week for us because it just was released yesterday morning. And what this does is this report looks at what they call a housing wage. It's not a term everybody's super familiar with, but it's very easy to understand. A housing wage is basically the hourly wage a full-time worker must earn in order to afford a modest and safe rental home or unit without spending more than 30% of their income on housing and utility costs.
And the results for Alaska, pretty tough to read. I was looking at some of the information that working at a minimum wage of $9.84 in Alaska, a wage earner must have two full-time jobs or work 78 hours per week to afford a modest one-bedroom apartment.
That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah, it's sobering news for sure. Alaska statewide, we have the 10th highest or 10th most expensive housing wage in the nation. If you look at the other states that are above us, you know, it's Hawaii's the number one, and obviously they have separate issues that the lower 48 deals with. But a lot of the western states, California, Washington, they're up there as well. But it's not too surprising given our geographic challenges that we have up here, high cost of construction, that our wage is that high. But what's really important to take away is that this isn't just an Alaska issue. There's actually not one single metropolitan area, not one zip code, not one state where a minimum wage employer can afford a two-bedroom rental in this entire country, which is a big challenge. So in Alaska, yeah, it is challenging, but it's not just a minimum wage challenge. If you look at what the equivalent per hour wage would be to afford a one-bedroom unit, statewide numbers, we're looking at $19.21 an hour.
Wow.
Or the equivalent of a $39,951 job that you have there. So obviously we aren't hitting that mark in terms of our average renter wage, which is below that mark. So it's a big challenge that we have ahead of us, and we need to work together to address it.
Yeah. So how do you – well, first of all, so this report comes out every year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yes.
How does this data compare to last year's data?
It's not too much different, but it's a little worse. And we're seeing this trend continue where – we aren't seeing a whole lot of lower income rental units coming on board nationwide. In fact, over the last 10 years, units that rent for $800 or less have decreased by 2%, whereas units that rent for more than $2,000 a month have increased by 97%.
Wow.
Nationwide. So we're seeing a lot of kind of higher end construction coming on board. And not a whole lot to backfill the lower income.
So what are you seeing here in Juneau? Do the trends for statewide in Alaska match what's happening here in town?
Yes. And unfortunately, in Juneau, we're the fifth highest housing wage district in the state. And so you look at the housing wage statewide, which is $24.80 for a two-bedroom unit. Here in Juneau, it's $27.42, which is the equivalent of 2.8 full-time minimum wage jobs.
Okay, and put that into hours. That would be working like 100 hours a week?
120 hours a week.
Yeah, so impossible.
Yeah.
So how are people making it work? Do you have a sense of how people are piecing this together to have shelter and food and take care of their children?
It's not surprising that when you see these numbers that Alaska is experiencing some of the highest overcrowding rates in the entire nation, that in order for people to have a room over their head, they're having to share living conditions. And especially if you go into rural Alaska, we're seeing severe overcrowding rates, 30 times the national average in there. And it's just because there's not that supply of housing available.
Okay. So how will you use this data in this next year to shape some of your priorities and try to reverse what we're seeing?
Sure. So obviously, you got to think of it scope-wise here. So Juno's not going to be able to, by itself, fix this problem. I do want to say that we are very lucky here in Juno. I live here in Juno, even though we do statewide work, that we have a city government that has invested so much into looking at housing issues. We have a chief housing officer in Scott Schombor and a housing homeless coordinator in Irene Gallion, and they're really putting a lot of work to bring in other partners to look at things like, how can we incentivize affordable housing costs? There's a housing action plan in place, as well as a variety of programs that assist with down payments for mobile homes or grants to create accessory dwelling units within your own property. So really looking at how can we get our stock up to try to drive the prices down. But how this report is really reflecting our work going forward, this is a big advocacy piece. Every elected official we talk to, we want to make sure that they know these numbers and that this is a priority that they should be looking at to address at a state and a federal level. In fact, we're really excited. Next month, we were one of two states invited to present in front of the United States Interagency Council on the Homeless, which has the high representatives from all 19 federal departments there, specifically looking at homelessness and housing issues. And we're going to bring our story to that group and say, look, this state cannot do this alone, and we really need the cooperation of all levels, federal, state, and local, to put their resources into fixing this problem.
Okay. So some of the takeaways from this conversation, pretty tough to afford housing if you're low income. But on the positive, especially here in Juneau, we have a lot of people at the city level who care about this issue and are actively working to try to make the situation better for people. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's correct. And, I want to put in a plug for the Juneau Council on Housing and Homelessness as well. They meet on a monthly basis, and they're an open group to have these conversations. And it's primarily consisted of nonprofit agencies and organizations around this around the city, but having that just residents' voice, concerned citizens' voice at that table is really important. So
how would people get information if they want to get involved? Go to the next meeting.
Yeah, go to the next meeting. Jump on the on the Google and just Google Juno Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, and they have a website where you can get in touch with them.
Okay, Brian. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to share with us today?
No. If you want to see copies of this data, you can jump to our website. It's AlaskaHousing-Homeless.org, or you can go straight to where this report is. It's NLIHC.org.
All right. Brian Wilson of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure.
Okay. Yeah.
This is Bird Note. During the day, an American robin sings a lovely, familiar song of rich phrases. The phrases vary and ring forth with a lilting quality. But as the sun begins to set, robin's song takes on a new and exquisitely different character. From sunset until dark, a robin adds ethereal whispered notes to its carol, creating a song of remarkable grace and complexity. Let's listen more closely to the fine detail of a robin's evening song by slowing down the same notes to half normal speed. Here's another passage of Evening Song at half speed. In the high latitudes, where twilight lingers late into the evening, a robin may expand its daytime carols into a twilight symphony that continues for hours. Support for BirdNote comes from Forterra, creating great communities and conserving great lands in Washington State.
Only fools run at midnight.
Run for Public Radio.
Needs your help.
Do you have a special song that gets you in the running groove?
I do. What's yours? Ooh, maybe a little. Submit your running song on Facebook.
And loan us your battery-operated boombox to keep the tunes coming on June 23rd.
For run registration, visit kto.org/foolsrun.
All right, you are listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. The time is 3:30. I'm your host, Cheryl Snyder, of the program today, joined now by organist Alan McKinnon, who is here to talk with us about his Friday concert series at the State Office Building. So, Alan, it's great to have you here. I think this is the first time I've met you in person, but I certainly have enjoyed your concerts up at the State Office Building many, many times. I was wondering if you could start. You have been playing up there for 40 years now, playing that organ.
I didn't do the math. I had to marry a math teacher to straighten out my checkbook.
Right.
But, yes, the dedication program was May 1st of 1977. Somebody has been playing every week. I've probably, in recent memory, play the most. When the organ opened in 77, there were quite a few people around town that we traded off, and almost every day there was somebody playing. And then it got down to where people left, moved elsewhere or whatever. And so we came up with the idea of just doing it once a week. And that became Friday. So there's two of us that trade off on a regular basis, T.J. Duffy and myself. And so depending on our schedules and that, it'll be one or the other of us. And there's another individual who's well known here in Juneau until they retired and moved up towards Palmer in the Valley. That was Alice Branton, and she had relatives still here in Juneau, and so when they come to visit, we tell her, well, there's the organ bench. No, anyway, you know, and then occasionally there'll be some interested organist that would contact us and come in on a cruise ship or fly in or what have you, and they'd end up, the State Office Building would end up contacting me, and we arranged to have them come up and try out the organ if they're not here on a Friday.
So how is it that our State Office Building has an organ in it?
Well, this started back quite a while ago. And W.D. Gross, who really started the motion picture business here in Juneau and Southeast, ordered up this Kimball Theater organ in 1928 for his Coliseum Theater, which is no longer standing. The Coliseum Theater was accessed from South Franklin through, and probably was on docking that would be in the area of where the City Hall is today. Well, in 1939 or 40, Gross had built the 20th Century Building, 20th Century Theater and Apartment Building, and he had them move the Kimball organ over to that location, Well, the 20th century is a full concrete building and quite safe and all like that. Thank goodness he had that done, because in the early 40s, I don't have an exact date, but the Coliseum Theater and apartments buildings burned. So it was pretty good that he had it moved over there. And so I first heard it or played it when I was much younger. I was working for the 20th Century Theater when I was in high school, and that was probably the first time that I played anything, not when the theater was open, but, you know, when staff was around and that sort of thing.
Did you have a base of piano? Had you started with piano?
Yeah, I started piano around 6 or 7 with Carol Berry Davis, who is a famous individual here in Juneau. She came up in the 20s to play for the silent movies, and she ended up teaching a lot of people piano, and then included organ later on. So
I imagine that was the only organ in Juneau, was the one that at the theater?
No, that was not the only one. There had been one at the Palace Theater, and they had it taken out and put into the Northern Light Presbyterian Church. The building is no longer standing. It was up at 4th and Franklin, and then in the early 60s, they built the A-frame building down on 11th Street for Northern Light Presbyterian, but the organ had already been removed from the church building at 4th and Franklin. But anyhow, there were other electronic organs around at different churches and that sort of thing.
So your Friday concerts, what sorts of things do you think about when you're getting prepared to do one?
Well, depends on, where we are in the calendar year and so on and so forth. TJ does some neat things. He did a special concert on St. Patrick's Day. Of course, he kind of dresses up in green for that event. And then here a week or so ago, he dressed up and played some old hits from the rock and roll era. I don't usually dress up except in my regular gear, but sometimes I'll, wear a color or something. But I just kind of pick songs and tunes from my, I have quite a few shelves of music at home and can pull things out from different eras and so on. And I have, you would imagine, I have a few songs from movie soundtracks or theater events, that sort of thing. And so we just put it together, and I try usually to play at least one classical tune, usually something by J.S. Bach, I usually start out with the national anthem and sometimes include the Alaska flag song. And for a number of months, I have been playing a medley of military songs to basically honor those people that are in the Army, Air Force, Marines, all of them. And I usually end up with with Semper Paratus, which is the U.S. Coast Guard song, because we have a very large number of Coast Guard individuals stationed here and also retired and living here. So it's just a variety of tunes, and some come out better than others.
Yeah. How are the acoustics in that space for you to play in?
Well, that was just by chance how that all happened. When they built that building in the early 70s, no one had any plans of totem poles or plants or theater organs or anything else in that space. And when I came back from the Air Force in college, there was a group here called the Save the Organ Committee. And they had been put together after a couple, Letha and Miles Renmley, had purchased this Kimball organ from the 20th century in 1970 and donated it to the state in 1975 because they had dreams of putting it in their house, but that never worked out. But they had an agreement with the state museum that the organ would, and this was it's right out of the quote, was to be restored as a museum piece, to be restored and made playable, to remain in Juneau, and to be installed in a public place. Well, the citizens of Juneau, through the Juneau Arts and Humanities Group, involved a lot of people in what they called the Save the Organ Committee. And I came back from being in the military and also finishing my music degree. And they invited me to join the committee. And the group, through just a variety of things, raised something in the neighborhood of $30,000 for the organ's restoration. Now, they did get a grant of a pretty good amount of money from the feds, and one of our U.S. senators, and I'm forgetting which one, was back in Washington, and probably it was... Well, I'll come up with it.
Yeah, we can get back to that. But yeah, you were just explaining how the organ came to be in the space that it is, and the acoustics wasn't designed for that space. Acoustics for an organ space wasn't designed for that, but it's ended up working out quite well.
The Save the Organ Committee with the members and so on and so forth, they had a number of prominent names around town that were on the list, and they Connie Boutchever, who had been on the State Arts Council, longtime resident here, and Carol Berry Davis was on there, a lot of other names, and a number of them have passed on at this point, but
So what can we expect tomorrow? You've got a concert tomorrow at noon. What are you playing?
I never know until I show up.
Okay,
I'll start with the Star Spangled Banner, and maybe I'll play the Alaska Flag Song tomorrow. Well, because today is Flag Day, and so. You ought to play something that might relate to that. The organ was restored by the same company that had originally sold it in 1928. And along the way, the Save the Organ Committee got... the enclosure, and it was designed, just a terrific idea from Frank Meyer, who was an architect here in Juneau at the time. He passed on a number of years ago, but Frank was terrific, and he is the one that designed the glass with the shutters up high. Most organ installations have the shutters in front of the pipes to let the sound out into the church or the auditorium or theater or whatever. But that was everybody's. Everybody liked that idea because it continues the glass of the library at that level. And it was built by a gentleman here in town, Nils Finn Larsen. It was open to the public, like we mentioned, May 1st, 1977.
Okay, so we're heading into a summer season of concerts. Noon tomorrow, they can catch you, and then you'll be playing every other week, rotating with T.J. Duffy. Did I get that right?
Yeah, and it always depends on our travel and personal schedules and stuff like that. But yes, that's our intent.
Terrific. Well, Alan McKinnon, thank you so much for joining us here today. We're looking forward to hearing you through the summer at the State Office Building, noon on Fridays, free concerts. It's great.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being here today. And you mentioned Bach being one of the artists you like to play. So we do have Toccata lined up right now to play.
Oh, you do?
We do. June 30th may not mean much to you, but at KTOO, it's the last day of our fiscal year. As we look towards the end of June, we see that there's $40,000 left to raise in membership support. That's why your contribution today is so important. If you've never given to the station, or you feel you can give more this year, or it's time to renew, please give now as generously as you can at ktoo.org. Thank you. It's 3:50 in the afternoon, and you are listening to KTOO Juno at 104.3, where we are live and local. This is Cheryl Snyder, your host for today's program, and joining me now in the studio is Rachel Ulitzer from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, our neighbors right across the street. Rachel,
hello.
You came in saying there is so much going on this weekend.
Well, it looks like it. Yeah, most definitely. People just handed me this list, because normally I don't do this whole Arts Up. This normally is Nancy and Megan, but everyone seems to be out of town.
We have confidence in you.
But we have so much stuff to do that we're just going to pull it all together.
It's great. Well, tell us, what are some of the highlights? What are the things we don't want to miss this weekend?
Well, let's see. Starting tomorrow, actually, we're going to do our shameless plugs for the Jack, is because our summer block parties are starting tomorrow. They're going to be every Friday from 5:30 to 7. We're going to normally try to do them outdoors, except for we're already planning for indoors, even though I know it's going to be sunny tomorrow. We're still going to have the big band. Takes a bigger setup. So I'm preparing in advance.
You just open the back doors.
I'm going to open the back doors. I'm going to open the front doors. We have Juno Big Band is going to be playing for the full hour and a half straight. They might just take one quick little break in the center just for a little MC work. But other than that, they're like, we're not going to stop because it's too hard to get people back. So they're just going to go for it. And we're going to have Juno Big Band starting at 5:30 tomorrow. And there's also going to be a few little vendors. We're not doing a lot of vendors this year. We're just actually doing choice vendors that are being invited. And so we've got a few that we got Sweet Song Chocolates that will be there tomorrow. We've got Deadly Dapper, which I guess makes insect and bug jewelry, which sounds really interesting to me. We have Pepper Bear Studio. We will also have Panhandle Produce. They're going to probably be a weekly fixture every Friday when they can make it. And then we'll also have Miss Scarlet's, which I really love having. You can go and buy your sunflowers every Friday at our summer block party.
And the vendors will be inside tomorrow as well?
Inside or outside. We're going to be scattered around. As you know, we're probably... Well, most people probably know that the Jack eventually will be running Centennial Hall, so we're going to try to push things over into that center parking lot. We're not quite there yet, so we're just going to keep it at the Jack just for this week, probably next week, but then after that, we're just going to keep expanding around. That's why we're just calling it block parties this year, because we're not going around the block. We're just blocking it.
Okay, and I'm curious. You mentioned that you are looking to have fewer vendors each week. What is that about?
Well, not fewer vendors. We're just being a little more restrictive and just they're going to be kind of invited. Sort of.
So it's and if more people want to get on your radar, they just contact you and say...
There is actually... Nancy has just put up a sign-up sheet. So you go ahead and sign up on our website. It's jahc.org. And then they will contact you and give you a good time. And they're going to kind of cater it to what kind of band is playing, what type of music is going on, things like that. But for our kickoff, Juno Big Band.
Sounds great. What else is going on this weekend?
Well, also on Friday, there seems to be a Friday night concert series at the Flight Deck. And there is a full lineup that you can find at alaskafishandchips.com. But I looked that up already for you. And it's going to be the Tin Star Pistols. And that is from 8 to 10 on Friday. And then that's pretty much Friday night, because then on Saturday we start going full bore with all kinds of other things going on. I know at the Jack it's going to be National Cancer Survivor Day Celebration of Life. That is, the doors will be opening at 6:30. There's an Aurora presentation at 7, and then live music with Flustered Cluckers at 8. There'll be dessert, no host bar, and V's cellar door. That's a suggested donation of $10 at the door.
So okay, there's and that's no at the Jack tickets. Tomorrow night.
Yeah, so that will be Jack tomorrow night. And there's also going to be Glitz tomorrow night that I do know that Saturday is sold out. Doors open there, or the show starts at 8. I'm guessing the doors probably open at 7.
And then that will also be going on Sunday. They have a show at 4.
And tickets are still available for Sunday?
I think Sunday they're still available. Those tickets, you go, it's on brownpapertickets.com. I just Googled Glitz Juno, and you can easily find those
tickets.
Okay,
and for those who may not know what Glitz is?
Glitz is the big sigla, Southeast Gay and Lesbian Alliance organization. It is their biggest fundraiser of the year. It is a drag show. It is now all ages. They're not restricting it anymore. It is
fabulous.
Really fabulous. Yes. I'm going. And then if you don't want to go to that or you just can't get in on Saturday night, there's also Galactic Bowling at Taku Lanes. This is a Smash Galaxy release party, which is Alaskan Brewing's new, their Smash is a single malt and single hop beer. So Galaxy is a single hop of their beers. It will be an over 21 event. It is a $15, it looks like. Chart buys you a game of bowling, shoe rental, and Smash Galaxy IPA. So that's quite a good deal. It's three sessions on the hour starting at 8. And so that's from 8 to 11. So you have just sessions on the hour.
Okay.
And also on Saturday daytime, you've got Gold Rush Days going on, which is also one of my favorite events. It's really tricky trying to be everywhere at once this weekend, but I'm going to totally do it.
And that's happening at Savico Park.
And that's Savico Park over on Douglas Island. Saturday is mining event, and Sunday is all logging. Those, it looks like booths are going to be there from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. There's a children's carnival from 1 to 3 p.m. on both days, and gold panning for children's and adults, I know at least on Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., and what else do we have? Let's see. Oh, there's also on Saturday, there's the children's hand mucking for ages 6 to 12 from 10 to 2. Everything else doesn't really have a time. They just kind of go through. I just found their whole schedule in the Capital City Weekly.
Okay, terrific. And Rachel, for folks who heard about some of this stuff and want more information, or if they want to see the listing of everything going on in town, we have tools on our website, on your website,
definitely.
And on the KTOO.org website. We share a community calendar.
Perfect.
Go to either one of our websites to get more information on all the fun things you can do in Juneau this weekend. Rachel, thank you so much for coming in
of
from
course.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, and thanks for all that you do to keep the arts vibrant in the capital city.
Will.
That's going to wrap up today's program of a Juneau Afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you missed any of today's show or you just want to listen to it again, you can go to our website at kto.org where we archive it. We will also be repeating the program in just a few moments over on KRNN at 102.7. Have a great afternoon.